welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 80 is on its way, the mighty 8-0. This episode is entitled, A Prophecy That Misread Could Have Been. We're going to talk about underhyped games, games that people may have not known as much about or haven't heard as much about that are really, really good and whatnot. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me is...
A co-host. No, Brian, finally coming back, right?
Yeah,
it's been a little while.
So Brian is here. Portal Game Podcast, podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. We are also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and got a shout-out in a recent episode. It was the Time Machine that got the shout-out, but hey, they're one and the same. The Portal, the Time right. Machine, Toy Store, Game Store. So that was pretty exciting. Hey, speaking of toys, Brian, we just went to New York Toy Fair. I talked about it a little bit on the last episode. What's your take on being there many more days?
Yeah, no, it's a great show. There's a lot of stuff to kind of, you know, take in. A lot of vendors. Most of it's, like, toy-related. You might have hit on all that with the podcast, but there's, you know, it's just good to kind of walk through, see what, you know, what's coming or what's expected, kind of get a sense of like where companies are really focusing their efforts, trying to see like what the trends are going to be for the year. So yeah, it's a lot to take in. We're still kind of going through trying to like figure out what stuff we need to reorder and, you know, like what, when we can bring certain lines either back in or start new lines or, you know, so on and so forth. So it's a great show. It's a lot to do. And yeah, like I said, we're still going through and doing work from the show.
Yeah, it was funny because I was so focused on games because that just works for me and I can spend a whole day just down there. Certainly tried to look for other things, but I know Kathy was kind of like more in the, what exactly should I be doing? And I just kept saying, you know, if something stands out to you in a crowd of all these toys, then that means it's going to stand out, you know, like that was the idea. So
no, it's definitely like there's for us, we'll order from, you know, there's so many vendors out there, toy vendors, game vendors, like this one is like a, you know, everyone's there. So we have to go through and most of them we only deal with like, you know, once or twice a year. Some companies are a little more regular, like Lego, like we'll bring in orders from them pretty consistently, like. But even then, it's like six times a year where we're expecting like good-sized Lego shipments to come in. So yeah, even like Lego, we're doing six times or so a year. Most of the other ones will bring in like a big order just to get to like, you know, free shipping or whatnot. But it's always case by case. And, you know, like there's so much to kind of go through and try to either revamp the store or just, you know, keep it fresh and exciting.
Nice. Cool. Well, we should talk about some upcoming events.
Yeah.
So the first one is on St. Patrick's Day, which is March 17th, is the Silk City Board Game Group. And I know they're bringing in Geek Fever games that they're going to be doing, running a bunch of games and things there. So that's at the Manchester Public Library from noon to 4:30.
Yeah.
And yeah, you want to go check that out?
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I don't know much about them. I guess Jen had made like a connection at PAX Unplugged, it sounded like. I don't know. They must have had a decent presence there.
Yeah.
But no, it's exciting, you know, trying to just play some new stuff or get, you know, get connections there. So.
Yeah, I mean, all these things are so cool that she's doing down there. The amount of people that are coming and the amount of publisher support. And now she's on Board Game Breakfast and, you know, just getting out there. She's doing a podcast now.
So they've got a lot of traction.
They're just doing a great job with all the library, you know, connection. And that's just such a great resource, right? Just another community center. I mean, that's a true community center, right? A library. Yeah. You know, we're building one here. That's also, sorry, Brian's laughing at me like, we're not a community center. But you know what I mean? Like, that's really, you know, the libraries to bring everybody in. So, all right. And then the other event is big. April 28th is
International Tabletop Day for 2018. So we're already starting to get some of the, like, pre-orders up for some of the promos or exclusives for that day. We're going to be open, you know, midnight to midnight, all 24 hours. So come down, check it out, and play some games.
Yeah. So there will be some promos that will be available?
I think so. I mean, the pre-orders are up. I guess I always want to, like, I don't want to tell people something's going to be
here.
See what
it is, what our cost is, all that kind of stuff.
Like, we're getting those on pre-order.
Okay.
Until they're in the shop, I don't want to promise anything.
Yeah.
But at the same point, like, we're pretty certain that we're going to be getting in some stuff. I don't know how much, like, is going to be, how much new stuff is going to be made available. You know, it seems like they're changing stuff every year. So, you know, I'm excited. Hopefully we'll get some good stuff to give you guys. And yeah, we're excited about it. So,
and there's no cost for the day. It is just a regular day of operation. Come in and play.
Just your time.
Cool. I just want to make sure people know those. So those are questions that get asked. And the midnight to midnight thing throws people off too. Like, which midnight to which midnight? It's like, I'm like, if you want to come and play Magic on Friday and just stay through, you're
just
good.
Just be there on Saturday anytime.
Yeah. Yeah, we're there. And don't feel like you have to come to all 24 hours. It's not a challenge. It's not we're just open because it's fun.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I always explain it to people and they always feel bad. It's like, oh, I don't think I can do the whole thing. And it's like, no, it's fine.
Come for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah,
in sleep. In the middle of the day.
We want you to be rested. But, you know, like, there's still a great turnout, like, you know, at all points. And some people will stay till, like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning. And then it's always funny to see them, like, come back at like 1 o'clock or, you know, noon or something.
Totally,
it's like
different.
This is, nothing's changed, but, like, you know, so much is going on in your life.
Well, and even just so people know, they can stay through to midnight. So if it's like, oh man, we have stuff all day, I'll show up at 5 p.m. You still have 7 hours to game if you show up at 5 p.m. So, you know, you could totally do that. And I think I was joking on the last episode about, like, the people that show up at like 7 a.m. They're like, okay, we woke up really early, we've got coffee, we're ready to go. And we're like, well, we've been going for 7 hours. What?
I mean,
I know. They already know my secret that I cheat and that I get there at 1 or 2 a.m. No big deal. I'm proud of it because I usually make it all the way through. Yeah, you're crazy because you, like, work the day before and then just stay straight through. So
I'll take a nap in there, though.
Nice.
Some people definitely do full, like, 48 or more.
Awesome. Other than that, you know, just events-wise, just remember that we have Thursday nights and Sunday afternoons are the big board game meetups, and really this past year, publishers have been awesome, and we've acquired a lot of new games, and they are not at my house. They're at the store, many of them. That sounds bad. I just mean until I review them. So there's lots of great stuff in the library to check out, and lots of publishers. I can't go through all the names, because at this point we've gotten stuff from 25 different publishers that have given us games to put in there. And so there's just lots of great games and things you might be looking to check out and whatnot. So check that out. Cool. I think we'll just move on to games we've been playing. I only have one. So it's really on you, Brian, to run through yours. So why don't you take one or two games that you've been playing lately, and then I'll throw my one in there and then go from there.
So I guess I'm kind of in that same boat. Like, I've been playing Charterstone a bit. My expectations were not, you know, I did not have high expectations for it, and I've been loving it with a 3-player game going. So I guess that's real quick. Besides that, I'm trying to think. We played some Magic Maze. Again, that's much better. You know, again, low expectations for me, and that's just such a great game, like, for a large group and whatnot. Besides that, I mean, it hasn't been a whole lot for me. So I guess Charterstone is trying to take up that time when I can.
Nice. Well, my one is I play Tiny Epic Western. So this was sent to us from Gamelin Games, and I just got a solo play in of it. So Tiny Epic Western is a tiny epic Western game. And so the theme is definitely strong there in terms of that. So you get a boss that you represent. So you could be the gambler or the scout or, you know, the outlaw or whatever. You've got all those different pieces. And then you set up kind of a wheel of different houses. So some are yours, and then you've got, like, the sheriffs and the town hall, and you set them out all in a circle. And then you're going to deal poker cards. So you've got a set of cards that are actually, like, 1 through 5 of 4 different suits. And you shuffle those and deal them out in between each building. Then each player gets a hand of 2 poker cards, and you put 1 down on the table, that you keep, and you discard the other one. That one on the table goes face down. And then essentially it's a worker placement game after that. So what you're trying to do is you get your worker, which is your posse, you put them on one of those buildings, and you're either immediately claiming a bonus, which there's three different resources. There's like the law resource, the money resource, and the ammo or guns resource. And so you put your worker down there, you immediately get the bonus, or you can claim it if you're still there at the end. Of course, then I can come along and I can duel you, so I can put my worker there, and I will start a duel with you. So when we duel, you roll these six-sided dice, which are bullet dice, so they're kind of cool in that sense. And then you can play your poker card to add to it. So you add your poker card to the roll. Now people get to see what your poker card is. And whoever wins, the other player gets laid face down. That person's face up will win the space, and you place all of yours. You'll get three workers if you you'll get two workers. You'll get three if you didn't get to buy a building. And buying buildings is essentially the goal of the game to get victory points. So you'll get a third one if that didn't happen. So everybody will place their workers. Then you'll figure out who gets what bonuses. Then each building has two poker cards around it, and you add your third to play three-handed, three-card poker. And it gives you the set of all the different hands that you can make and what wins. And whoever wins that site will get like an additional influence bonus that's there. So you're basically collecting resources by placing workers and winning with three-card poker every site that you're at. After that, you get the rights to buy the buildings that are there. So the buildings are going to cost these resources. They then give you like a bonus, so it's like another worker placement space that people can go to on your building. And they give you points, and then they give you kind of like almost like stock in railroads and town and something else, maybe like town infrastructure. And then one player gets to move up that one of those stocks. So the game's going to be six rounds. And then one of those will move up three places to be in first place, one will be second place, and one will be third place. So you're going to earn points based on those stocks. So there's a little bit of exchange there. I guess one's like trains. Anyway, whatever it is. I think I said railways. So in single player or solo player, it basically does the same thing. The other player will roll a die to randomly be where they are. And like a lot of these games, they don't actually collect any resources, so you're not really playing the other player, they're just interacting with you. And then they'll buy up building cards. And so you're just trying to beat their final score at the end, and you can have them start with cards to make it harder or easier. It was okay, but I guess that randomness of them just rolling a die doesn't really get me to predict that it's just like, oh, now we're in a duel. So it felt like because of that, I just wanted to take the highest card I was dealt. But one time I was dealt like two ones. So it was like, well, now all my gunslinging actions are not going to be very good. So it was tricky to do that. So it's neat for a little worker placement game. But I'm not sure it was something that I would pull out regularly. Of course, this was solo play. So maybe playing it like four or five players. Does it play five? I think it just plays four. It might be more interactive and that might be interesting. But it was hard to like balance, am I going to have these resources, and then can I win that poker hand and buy that building? So it's hard to like wrap my head around guaranteeing all those things, which is that pre-planning, which is fun in like a longer Euro, but in this game that was so light, it just felt like, I forgot that I'm going to now be one short on that. Yeah. You can use your like law points to re-roll the dice, so there definitely was mitigation of those things. But there were times where you were just beat by the poker hand, so you just, it was just tough to be able to do all those things. So it was a neat game. I thank them. It's going in the library here, so people can definitely check that out. I really always like the concept between the Tiny Epic games, but none of them have drawn me in significantly. I kind of liked Galaxies.
Yeah, no, I want to play that again now that you're talking about this.
But Kathy did not like it at all. She's like, it is space themed. So she's funny. Sometimes space theme is like Roll for the Galaxy, no yeah. issues. But Tiny Epic Galaxies was like huge space. Pulsar, huge space theme for her. Like, I can't. I think too I much said that she wanted Pulsar to be
something
like
anything
we are collecting unicorns in the forest and we're wandering through this forest and stopping right. it. Like, that would have totally drawn her in more than space. And I'm like, the theme doesn't matter in Pulsar to me, but to her, because of that, it was like annoying to her. So.
Yeah, anyway. No, that's a great game too.
Yeah, it's so. But that was Tiny Epic Western. So not really something I'm looking to play again, but it wasn't necessarily like badly made. I wasn't annoyed at the game or anything. So, but I do thank them for sending us that. So
nice.
Cool. That's what we've been playing lately. Let's move on to a little discussion topic. I'm not even going to put a space here. We're going a little faster for this episode. We're recording at the store, and Brian needs to get somewhere. So
yes,
we're going to...
All my fault.
Yeah, I'm blaming it all on Brian. So we're going to move to that. All right, it looks like you were making a list while we were talking of some...
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know exactly... Yeah, so you can kind of lead through. And...
So we're just going to talk about underhyped games. It's just, you know, I've been trying a little bit to go back and replay games that, like, I really like games that I would, you know, put in the 8, 9, 10 category of, you know, BGG rating or whatever, and be like, I need to play these again. These are, like, amazing games. Not just like, oh, that was a pretty good game.
Yeah.
And I call them underhyped. These are not games that are, like, never talked about. Like, you won't know the publisher, you won't know the designer, you cannot find them.
But, like, that's really tough to, like... That niche is really shrinking, you know, because there's so many things out there that we'll talk about pretty much anything.
And I really didn't go back very far either. It's not like, oh, these are also 20-year-old games or even things that have been republished or whatever. And I tried to think of, like, people love this game, but this game that's like it doesn't get talked about. So I'll start with that first example.
Okay.
So people love Clank. Clank is pretty close to an evergreen title, right? One of those ones that's just going to keep selling and selling and selling. And Clank is great. And I talked about this on the last podcast, but we played Tyrants of the Underdark. And they came out about the same time, and people know about Tyrants. People have probably played Tyrants of the Underdark. But to me, like, it's kind of the next step. Like, Clank is just a really fun, almost family-friendly deck builder with a board. Tyrants gets a little bit more into, like, I'm calculating and figuring out things. And to me, yeah, it's just under hype. You just don't really hear people talking about it the way you hear people talking about Clank. And I get it. I think Clank is inherently a more fun game.
Yeah.
I think I stated that Tyrants is a little bit, like, on the more clever end. So the fun I'm having is being clever in that, more than, like, the joy of, like, I'm gonna move here and here, and then I'm gonna slay that monster, and then I'm gonna pick this thing up, and then I'm gonna move over here, like, comboing all that stuff together, which is really exciting in Clank.
So. But, I mean, even Clank took a little while to gain some traction, right?
It did, it's true, yeah.
And now, like, with more expansions and whatnot, like, I feel like that's just hit, like, a solid niche, and, like, you know, there's a lot of support for it, too. Tyrants got an expansion, but it doesn't seem like it's gonna have the same, like... You know, like, they're not doing the same sort of marketing strategy for it.
Oh, yeah, definitely not. Yeah, so maybe underhyped is the wrong term, just underrated in general.
Gotcha.
You know, might be what I'm looking for, but whichever. That's kind of the idea. So what have you got on your list so I can attack yours?
Oh, yeah, Deus.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that one's such a great game. Like, it's been a little while. I guess it kind of fell off my radar for a little bit, too. But that one's just so, you know, like, it just... flows really well, you know. And I remember playing it, like, sitting down playing the first time, and it was like, we're kind of looking at it, and it just doesn't look, I don't know, it looks intriguing, but it doesn't look like it's going to, like, fit together well. I don't know, it's tough to explain.
It looks boring too,
a little bit,
like,
yeah,
the tiles, like, are pretty bland.
I guess the colors are, like, the palette doesn't really give, like, a whole lot to, like, you know, to give you an idea of what it is. But then, you know, it's just such a cool, like, engine builder where you're, like, you've got a deck of cards and you're cycling through that really quickly. And maybe that's just where it's, like, it's enjoyable. Like, I like going through that and, like, you know, discard, like, getting cycling through that whole deck to find what works best for me. And then stuff is presented to, like, you know, you get stuff presented to you and you have to decide, like, is it worth trying to go down this path now that I have these cards, or, you know, do I just pitch them and start, like, try to really find that thing that I was hoping to do from the get-go? So it kind of forces you down these paths that, like, that change. So you have to be a little tactical in that sense. And I think that's just, like, it's really fun to try to figure out that that balance of it.
I feel like this totally, the hype train here is Terraforming Mars, right? With the engine building and the cards and everything that you're just digging for. But you don't dig as much in that as you do in Deus. But Deus is that same, like, because that's an engine builder for sure, right?
Deus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a huge engine builder. So I feel like if I'm trying to connect two games, like, the game that definitely is bigger in this... And again, when I say it's bigger, the games that are bigger are sometimes even better. I like Terraforming Mars more than I like Deus. Mm-hmm. But just trying to get people to see, like, if you're playing Terraforming Mars, you know, seven times a week, hey, throw in one day a week of playing Deus, right?
Right.
Would be kind of the idea. It's not always like, these games are better, and Terraforming Mars should be destroyed, and Deus should be, you know, put on a pedestal. Like, it's not that idea, but just...
But it's one. It's just that, like, you know, even at the beginning for Terraforming Mars, again, like, it's one of those ones that once, you know, like, I didn't hear much hype leading into it, and then a little after, like, once it had been on the market, like, it just... kept selling through, and everyone talked about it, like, after it had that, like, that release. You know, like, it took a little while, but it felt like, you know, Deus almost feels like it's kind of still in that fringe where Terraforming Mars, you know, had been, like, before it really got all the hype. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like they're kind of, they've got, you know, a cool, like, those similar mechanisms or whatnot, like, trying to build off of that and cycle through. But Terraforming Mars took that next step up.
Yeah. No, it definitely did. Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I guess, like, Deus has an expansion. It wasn't my favorite. Like, it had some parts that were cool.
Yeah, I could play the original and live without the expansion. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's, yeah, Deus, so that's a great game. So
yeah, it's weird. You know, Bonacore, I guess, threw some support at Terraforming Mars.
A little bit, yeah.
But there have been three expansions. There's two out and the third one on, you know, I mean, and I think there's like six in the can or something already, you know, so they got a bunch there. I mean, it's really not him too. The Frick's family like had ready to go and they had to strip the game down in some sense. So, all right. So the big game that everybody's talking about and it's still popping, I just played it recently, is Concordia, right? And Concordia's masterpiece, wonderful game, so good, etc. But the other Matt Gaetz game that I think is so good is Navigador.
Mm-hmm.
That one's really, really good. And I feel like people like Concordia, and then Transatlantic came out, and people were like, it's just Concordia light, and I don't want Concordia to get lighter, right? Or whatever. So I feel like where people need to go is Navigador, if they haven't played that. Or if they haven't played it in a while, go back and play that one. Because that one's cool. It's got that little economy, but it's just like the right economy, right? It goes up and down, but it really affects things.
Yeah.
And it moves, and you can kind of predict the end of the game, and you really are interacting off of, oh, you just opened up that territory? Okay, now we're all going to spill in there. And it has the true rondel instead of the card rondel. It has the rondel that we're all working right on together. And so I feel like people would really get that rondel feel, you know, I'm say for the first time if they haven't played that rondel. But Navigador is really good.
Yeah. No, it was a while of that. Like, it's been a while since I played that.
Yeah, did we play it in Alabama? Have you played it since then?
I don't think so. Did you play it a lot? Like then. When you just started off?
I probably played it five times before we played it there in Alabama. So if that's my last play, then six times ago, I can't remember. Okay. I think we had a copy here that I pulled and like played by myself, a two-player game. That doesn't really count, I know. Because I wanted to play it again, and then I think it went back to you since. I think so it's your copy.
Right.
We should be careful. When we say they're here, many of them are your copies. So
yeah.
Cool. What do you got?
I don't know, a lot of games that I just like, and I wanted to, I guess.
Did you put Terraforming Mars down on the underhyped?
Well, where is the hype? You know, what, like, now it's hyped. It's
It was underhyped.
I didn't know what your
Gotcha.
I did. I crossed it off though because we talked about it. And I guess it doesn't fit the same criteria.
How about Catan?
Is that one hyped? I mean, Roll for the Galaxy's on here too, and that one gets love, but it's not like, I don't know. I guess I've played that too much to really go into.
Roll is just the game I want to teach people.
Yeah.
Whereas I have to go back and play Race. I just haven't played it in so long. I feel like it's inherently the better game. This feels like the Caverna Agricola thing too. Like, Caverna is the one I want to just like teach and play with people. Agricola is the one to dig into, but man, like, we just, that play that Kathy and I played like 6 months a year ago, the last three rounds were just a bloodbath, just like,
for Agricola,
it was just like, well, I'm gonna take all the sheep, then I'm gonna take all the cows, and just slaughter them all for nothing, like, it was just brutal, because it was like, well, I can't achieve my objectives, so screw you, and it was just like, wow, we just went from a shot at 50 points to 17 points, like,
yeah,
it was crazy, but.
No, I guess... Yeah, all I was going for, like, Roll for the Galaxy, just, I feel like that's, I don't know, that's at the top of my list, you know, probably my favorite game that I've been playing, and that one just, I guess it's just partially because of the quantity and just the different paths that you can take with it, and I think it does get that attention, but it's not, like, it's not talked about in like, you know, best games of, you know, however long ago, you know, within the past few years. And I think, I guess, especially with the expansion, like that one, I feel like you need the expansion after you've like you can play out the base game. I feel like you can get to a point where you've played it enough to really kind of see what it's got or what it can present. With the expansion, I feel like that bumps it up to give it so much more replayability. And, you know, I haven't gotten tired of it.
It like doubles the starting tiles, right?
It's quite a bit. I mean, that's huge. That's huge.
Since you match them and you get dealt two of each, right?
I know, opening up that expansion and punching it, like it was only basically those starting tiles, a couple of the new ones to go into the bag. But like I personally was, you know, disappointed with that because I was thinking the like variability would be, let's make this bag massive you know, have two bags, you know, like just
yeah, but you may
keep
never
adding
see
more stuff in that way. And I'm glad I was wrong about that. Like the replayability definitely is coming from those different ways to start off, and it seems so marginal, but like it gives you a direction. And it felt like there was more of a hierarchy with the original ones, just the base game, where it's like these ones are just better than these. Whereas with the expansion, I feel like there's more to it than just, you know,
the way you match things.
This one's pretty clear what I want. So,
all right, I'm gonna go to a game that I know you don't like.
Uh-oh.
I think Codex is super underhyped. So this is like a two-player dueling Magic style game, but it also has deck building, and it also has like the Mage Wars thing where you have all your cards in a book, which is super AP, right? Like at least it kind of builds up so you know where you have a rough idea where you're going. But I love this game. This is another one of those two player games. Kathy kind of liked it, so I've got to try to play this with her again. She said she would try it at some point, but we are just like, we're playing so much right now that it's tough to like, oh, let's, you know, throw in a game of this as well.
That's pretty much self-contained though, right?
It is, which is nice. So it's not a CCG. But I just think this game is great. I think it's so clever. And, you know, Magic isn't like the greatest thing to me, but this one just has so many different, oh, I could bring this hero in to protect here, and I can do this, and if I play all these cards, I only get to draw so many, so you've got different resources that you're limiting. I mean, certainly those first couple plays are just going to be fumbling through reading all the cards. I'm like, oh, that card's super powerful. And it also has a peak, like it has like ultimate spells and ultimate characters when they come out. Like, they are meant to end the game. Like, I'm going to beat you with this character in two turns, unless you can counter it. But that just gives it an arc, you know? When you get to that arc, it's going to be over, so you're not playing for an hour and 45 minutes. You know, you're going to play without reading the cards, the game's 30 to 45 minutes. You have to read the cards, you're going to add a lot of time.
Yeah, I feel like the problem with this style of game, for me, is just the investment you need to make into it, time-wise.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not at the point where that's going to be the game I'm playing for the next, like, you know, like, I'm not going to be completely invested in figuring out everything about the game. You know, like, I sat down and, you know, like, there are some games where it's just, like, you play through it until you know, like, you're almost beating your head against the wall. Like, I feel like Glory to Rome or, like, again, going back to, like, Race for the Galaxy, like, those are games where it's just, like, just get through this until you've turned the corner and you know the system and you can play within that. I think that's kind of where the value would come from, like Codex or Mage Wars or Summoner Wars, like all that sort of stuff. And I'm just not at that point right now. So I guess I can see that it's like, it would be fun to play as the game that I'm playing, but I'm playing more than just that.
Well, I think where you and I differ is on these types of games. Specifically, because I think like in a Lisboa or in a Terraforming Mars, we're both going to be along the lines of, like, I'm really planning this out. And this turn, I know I'm going to do exactly this, and next turn, and I'm definitely planning turns ahead. But in a game like this, I will just read a card and go, ooh, that sounds fun, and I'll Tom Vassal it and just throw it in. Oh, ooh, that one sounds fun, and I'll throw that in and just see what happens. Whereas I think you, with all sense, you want to know that you've planned ahead. Like, oh, that was the great, you know, I'm not saying that you can't have fun with something like that. I'm just saying you have more fun when you know that what you're planning is working out. Whereas for me, I'm like, maybe this card will be fun. And maybe, so I'm not overly worried about, like, did I read every card and try to figure those things out, which is exactly what you're saying. If I know all the cards, then I know, I'm going to counter by doing this, and you're going to do that, right? Right. And the game kind of stays within my control. The chaos is kind of fun for me.
It feels like I was never, like, you know, it kind of feels like you're going into it in, like, a tournament mentality, or at least I am, the game like this, where it's just, like, head-to-head, you know, like, stressful and just, like, you know, very tense. And it's, like, if you don't know the system or the cards or whatever, it just feels random. And I think that's just where, you know, like, I'm not at that point right now. And I can't explain it. Like, I'm sure there are games where you can, you know, tell me, hey, this is the exact same way, but it's a board game and not, like, a card-driven. You know, like, I could see that being some argument there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess I can't explain it, but it's just not where I'm, I'm not playing those types of games right now.
Cool. Well, I think it's super underrated in that two-player dueling category. Like, it's a great, great game. Got another one?
I mean, I guess, I don't know. You're probably more up on how much something gets talked about anyway. But, like, Clans of Caledonia, like, does that one feel, how does that feel to you, hype-wise?
It's interesting. I feel like, you know, when it was on Kickstarter, it was huge. Everybody was so excited, like, oh, somebody redid Terra Mystica, and maybe this will, like, fix the things I don't like about Terra Mystica. And, oh, it's, you know, it's got this, you know, all these things. And it came out, and it felt like people were, like just kind of the general people playing, kind of Twitter land or whatever, was like, oh, this is really fun, and we're loving this. And then as reviews came out, which were later, reviews were not days and weeks after. This is one of those games that got reviewed months after. And I feel like some of the heavier gamers or the middleweight Euro gamers were kind of like, it's fun, I would play it, but it wasn't amazing, you know? Dukes of Dice, Heavy Cardboard, those people kind of gave it like a, it's fun, but why am I not playing Terra Mystica? And that's definitely where I'm at. And now Gaia Project. It's like, I don't really have a reason to come back to it when I just want to play Gaia Project. Unless you can tell me we can really play it in an hour.
Okay.
Or maybe an hour 15. You know, because I don't know that I'm going to throw down two-player Gaia Project, even though I think there's nothing inherently wrong with it.
Yeah.
I just feel like, at that point, I'm probably going to play something else and wait to play Gaia Project with three or more. But now I'll say that, and I'll play multiple Gaia Project 2, because I've been playing solo again.
Yeah.
I lost 94-89 in my last game.
No, but I guess this one kind of feels like it's in that, like, that mid to heavy weight, like that, you know, that category. That there are a few that are out there, like Rococo or Yokohama,
right there,
or, you know, even something like Mombasa or something, where, like, they're,
whoa, you jumped.
Yeah, no, that's heavy. But, like, I feel like those are, there's, like, a scale in there, like, those are kind of in that, like, in between those two, and it's, like, it's tough to, like, jump out unless there's, you know, ongoing stuff for those games, you know, like, more stuff coming out. You know, like, so I mean, they're cool, they've got a niche, but, like, the theme isn't going to be, like, transcending the hobby or anything. It's not going to be bringing it to a whole new level for, you know, for keeping it on people's tables or any of those games. Does that make, like, that just seems like that's kind of where a lot of that hype fades away for those types of games. And they're great. It's just, there are so many new games coming out too, where it's like, this is kind of replacing all these other, you know, standard themes, like, even though they're cool and unique and whatnot, there's just more stuff coming out, too much to really handle for, you know.
You definitely hit on something. People are always looking for the game that's going to replace the game they already love, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a big thing. Like, oh, this is going to replace this game that I already like,
right.
So it's got to be even better. And then it either does, I guess, and it's kind of like, oh, well, I'm done with my favorite game, or, oh, it didn't, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like that with Import-Export. It just didn't replace Glory to Rome at the end of the day.
Right.
You know? All right, I'm going to just go a couple family-style games. So Heroes of Cascaria from Haba, Fabled Fruit from Stronghold, and Treasure Hunter, which is Queen Games. So these are all family-style games. Treasure Hunter, I guess, being the heaviest of the bunch. But Treasure Hunter is a great way to teach drafting, because it really ups, like, the, this is where I would go after Sushi Go. So, you know, again, saying family style. So these are underhyped family style games. Because this can play six players, does drafting, and, like, has something to do with the drafting, not just score the points from Sushi Go.
If you're just at the portal, though, like, that would have been overhyped for a bit.
Yeah, that's true. It was played a lot here. And then Fabled Fruit is just awesome. I love that game. I love that it changes. I don't think you have to play it with the same group. The same group is going to appreciate it more. Because really the fun of the game is seeing all the new animals come out. You know, and having new spaces. Playing it once and being like, oh, those were the spaces, and then never playing it again and not seeing new ones isn't going to be nearly as interesting. And then Heroes of Cascaria, I just play with kids all the time. And it's just like a car. It's to me, it's like Ticket to Ride. You know, you're collecting cards and drawing them off and trying to move. It's much faster, much quicker, and much lighter than Ticket to Ride. But that's a great one to play with kids, you know. I haven't played My First Journey at all. Zephyr was already fully capable of playing Ticket to Ride full, so I had no reason to go backwards, you know. Let's play something lighter. But those are three underhyped kids games to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's tough to, like, separate out the ones that are played a lot from the ones that are talked about a lot, you know. Like, I feel like there are certain, there's a certain grouping of games, like, you know, if it's like Rhino Hero or Ice Cool or, you know, stuff like that, where it's like, consistently, like, people are buying it and playing those games all the time. I guess maybe I'm just not hearing or, like, seeking out the venues that would talk about them all the time.
That's true, yeah.
So, but I think those two, like, you know, those, like, stuff like that is just a great, another great aspect of the hobby where it could go under the radar a little bit, where it's, you know, if you're talking about all these strategy games and whatnot and trying to get those, you know, bring attention to those games, a lot of these, like, you know, like kids games and stuff like that, like, that's going to be less of the focus, or it's just viewed differently, right? Like, it's just not going to be the same sort of hype that you're getting for the other games.
All right, I got one for you because I don't think you've played this game.
Uh-oh.
It's a co-op.
Okay.
So Spirit Island we know is great, right?
Yeah.
And I played Pandemic Rising Tide. That was awesome.
Yeah.
So these ones are, you know, known.
I think you have this game, though, right?
Yeah.
You have it, like, at your house?
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to play it.
Yeah.
Days of Ire. Days of Ire is a really good co-op game. It's really fun. It has a, like, two-player mode and a one-verse-all mode. But it has, like, a co-op mode where you have a deck that just generates the other player. And I think that's the best way to play it.
Okay.
I think that's really cool.
So we just need to trade some games back.
Yeah, and it's really good. It's very story-centered. It very much reminds me of Freedom Underground Railroad in that, like, the way the story connects. Like, even though you're like, oh, we're going to have to let that section of town go, you're like, but there's people there. Like, right? So you're really connected to this cardboard chit that you don't want to see flipped over and then removed from the board. Even though it's a cardboard chit, it's got enough of a story. Because, you know, this is really of the rebellion of students, you know, high school and college and young adults that rose up against the communist powers and lost historically. But they become people, you know, oh, my gosh, I don't want to see that happen to them. And so it's really got that feel. It's a really good game. It's really fun co-op. It's really heady and hard to figure out. Yeah, and they've got an expansion or a follow-up or something. I assume it does everything. Like, I assume it will tie in and be on its own. But yeah, you should play that game because it's really fun. Cool. Well, those are our underhyped games. So let us know what you think is underhyped or underrated, or it's just fun and people don't talk about it. I don't know, something along those lines. But I think that's it. Kind of a quick episode.
Yeah.
But a good one for number 80. A prophecy that Miss Red could have been, I believe is what we titled that. So I think that's it.
Yeah.
International Tabletop Day. Get it on your calendar. April 28th. Going to be one of the best days. Come on down to the store. Drive long distances. Stay over at hotels near us. It's going to be really exciting.
Yeah. No, I'm down. Play some games.
But until next time, I am your host, The Brant.
And I am Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on March 1st, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Board Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.